It's widely acknowledged that disparities exist in missing person cases. When a victim fits the mold of an all-American girl next door from an affluent family, their case tends to garner significantly more national attention. This reality was evident in two remarkably similar cases involving pregnant mothers that occurred in California in 2002. The divergent treatment and media coverage of these cases showed that not all victims are equal. Evelyn Hernandez was born in El Salvador, and while still an infant, her mother left her behind to escape the civil war and immigrate to the United States. She settled down in the Mission District, a heavily Latino neighborhood in San Francisco, California. Evelyn's mother worked odd jobs to save up enough money to bring her daughter over to California. It wasn't until 14 years later that Evelyn finally joined her mother, but the union was troubled. Evelyn had grown up without her mother, and commented that she was more like a ghost than somebody she knew and loved. Nevertheless, Evelyn was enrolled at Macatier High School, where she found an outlet in the after-school theater program taught by Berta Hernandez. Berta recalled how Evelyn was always punctual, and she took the class seriously. She helped to write adaptions of Romeo and Juliet to reflect an immigrant's struggles. Evelyn developed a close bond with Berta, who went on to become her friend and mentor. Berta recollected, "I had a close relationship with her. I had a lot of appreciation for her." Evelyn was also keen to learn English, and she took extra classes to improve her skills. Then when Evelyn was 17 years old, she became pregnant. Her mother didn't approve, so Evelyn moved out of the family home to prepare for the birth of her son. In 1999, Evelyn welcomed Alexis into the world, and she lovingly nicknamed him Alex. His father was a Navy man who had left San Francisco before his birth and knew nothing of his son. Evelyn took on the role of single mother with pride, and her entire life was dedicated to Alex. He was enrolled at Buena Vista Elementary School, and Evelyn always attended school parent meetings. Berta recollected, "It was her thing, give her child all the instruction he needed to be happy. She went to the classroom with her child. She was always very consistent with that." Evelyn was determined to make a good life for herself and Alex, and she worked hard. She struggled with English, but she took on a role as a drugstore clerk, a nurse's assistant, and as a restaurant server in the Tony Clift Hotel. Money was always tight, so Evelyn and Alex lived out of small rented bedrooms and cramped flats and homes. But everything that Evelyn did was motivated by her love for her son. Since money was scarce, Evelyn didn't own a car. She got the bus to and from work and walked her son to and from school each day. They lived in an apartment in the Crocker Amazon neighborhood of San Francisco, which was paid for by 36-year-old Herman Aguilera, Evelyn's boyfriend. Herman worked as a mechanic for the United Airlines at San Francisco International Airport. He also worked as a freelance driver for A-plus limousines in South San Francisco. They had met back in 1998 and had struck up a friendship before things turned romantic. Towards the end of 2001, Evelyn learned that she was expecting a baby boy with Herman. She had picked out the name Fernando, and the pregnancy wasn't easy. In 2002, she left her job at the hotel and went on disability. Evelyn was eagerly awaiting the birth of her baby son, and on the 30th of April 2002, Herman went to IKEA and purchased Alex a new bed. Evelyn was just a week away from giving birth, and she wanted everything at the apartment to be perfect. Afterwards, Evelyn and Herman met at San Francisco General Hospital, where she had gone for a routine prenatal examination. Herman then drove Evelyn back to her apartment where he assembled the bed, and then picked up Alex from school and drove him back home. At about 8 a.m. on the 1st of May 2002, 24-year-old Evelyn called up her sister, Olivia Hernandez, who lived in Arlington, Virginia. Evelyn told her sister that she was having pain in her abdomen. Olivia recollected, she was pregnant. She was going to leave her son at school, but she wasn't feeling well. Olivia asked Evelyn whether she had somebody else to take Alex to school so that she could rest at home in bed. But Evelyn said that she didn't, and that she would take him herself. Later that morning, Alex arrived at school safe and well, and afterwards Evelyn took a bus to the bank and made a deposit. Afterwards, she went to a nearby Ross Dress for Less store and purchased a new purse. At about 6 p.m, Evelyn picked up her mail from outside her apartment, including her disability benefits check. At 9 p.m. that night, Evelyn called up her other sister, Rena. It appeared as though Evelyn's stomach pains from that morning had subsided, and she was in good spirits as she chatted with her sister. They spoke about Evelyn's upcoming baby shower before saying goodnight. The next morning, the weather in San Francisco was pleasant but cool. Alex was scheduled to begin his classes at Buena Vista Elementary School. However, Alex never showed up. That afternoon, Evelyn's sisters attempted to get in contact with her, but to no avail. It wasn't until the 7th of May that Evelyn and Alex were reported missing by her boyfriend, Herman. He reported that the last time he had spoken with her was on the 30th of April, the day before Alex failed to show up at school. At first, detectives considered whether Evelyn had fled with her son after an argument with Herman. However, he reported that there had been no problems in their relationship, and added that Evelyn hadn't had any mood swings related to her pregnancy. He said that when Evelyn and Alex disappeared, he first of all conducted his own investigation. He knocked on her apartment door repeatedly and routinely phoned her cell phone, but failed to get in contact with her. His first fear, he said to detectives, was that she had gone into labour, so he checked around all of the local hospitals, but Evelyn wasn't there and neither was Alex. When detectives chatted with Evelyn's friends, they too said that they had been trying to reach her, but with no success. Evelyn's sisters as well had been trying their hardest to find her. They had handed out flyers all throughout San Francisco, but they spoke limited English and didn't know much about United States laws and whether they could report her missing. The first point of investigation for detectives was to check Evelyn's apartment to see if there were any clues that could lead them in the right direction. Inside, they came across Evelyn and Alex's passports, indicating that they couldn't have traveled too far, if they had in fact travelled anywhere on their own volition. Detectives were hoping to find Evelyn's cell phone, but it was nowhere to be seen inside the apartment. According to one of Evelyn's friends, they had been paying for Evelyn's cell phone after she vanished, in the hopes that she was still alive and would reach out. There was nothing inside Evelyn's apartment to indicate that she had any plans to leave, only further intensifying the mystery of her and Alex's whereabouts. Then on the 14th of May, a man was walking in a fenced dirt parking area next to a canal near East Grand Avenue in South San Francisco when he came across a woman's wallet. When he looked inside, he found some cash as well as a disability benefits check that was made out to Evelyn. Despite the fact that Evelyn and Alex still remained missing, detectives hadn't published any information about their disappearance. So the man who found the wallet had no clue that it belonged to a missing person. He repeatedly tried to get in contact with Evelyn to let her know that he had found her wallet, but he couldn't reach her despite his best efforts. On the 31st of May, he handed the wallet in to police, and detectives now had a specific area to search. Detectives descended on the area and searched the shallow canal that led to the bay and called in sniffer dogs, but they failed to pick up a scent. In another effort to trace Evelyn and Alex, detectives checked in all local shelters. Since she was due to give birth on the 7th of May, they also checked local hospitals. But neither Evelyn nor Alex could be traced. It wasn't until June that the media caught wind of Evelyn and Alex's peculiar disappearance. Detectives in San Francisco publicly announced on the 11th that they suspected foul play, Captain Bill Davenport of the police department's juvenile division announced. We're definitely concerned there might be foul play. They've just vanished. When the peculiar disappearance was made public, there was an immense fear that Evelyn could have been the dismembered body that was found a week beforehand. The dismembered body of a woman had been discovered in a Daly City self-storage unit, and she still remained unidentified. Detectives quickly ruled out this theory, however, due to the fact that the deceased woman wasn't pregnant, nor had she given birth. Meanwhile, detectives released photographs of Evelyn and Alex along with the description. Evelyn stood at about 5 feet 5 inches tall and weighed around 170 pounds. She spoke Spanish and very little English, and she had brown eyes, brown hair, and a medium complexion. Alex was described as a Hispanic male with brown hair and brown eyes. Detectives appealed to the public for information and asked the community to think back to the 1st of May. They asked that if anybody had seen a pregnant woman to get in contact immediately, as Captain Davenport stated, "Hopefully we'll find her in a healthy condition with her new child." They also asked that if anybody had assisted a woman in delivering a baby in the past month to come forward. In addition with speaking with Evelyn and Alex's loved ones in the United States, detectives also made inquiries in El Salvador. They also made contact with Alex's father in Puerto Rico, but he hadn't seen them, nor had he heard from them. In fact, he wasn't even aware that he had a son. There was paranoia that Evelyn and Alex had come to harm, whether intentionally or intentionally. As a result, detectives checked with medical examiners in 58 counties in California, as well as two in Nevada, but to no avail. The weeks gradually transformed into months, and Evelyn and Alex's loved ones were left grief-stricken by the uncertainty of their whereabouts. Towards the end of July, hope had dimmed that they were going to be found alive, and the investigation was taken over by homicide detectives. Inspector Holly Pira announced, "The case is now being investigated as a potential double or triple homicide." She continued and said that there was a strong possibility that there had been foul play, and that they were now appealing to the public once more for information. By this point in the investigation, detectives had learned that things between Evelyn and Herman were complicated. While Herman was Evelyn's boyfriend and the father of her unborn child, he was also a married man. Evelyn had only discovered that Herman was married when she was 4 months into her pregnancy. While she had been ecstatic about the pregnancy, Herman wasn't too interested. One afternoon, Evelyn called up his mother to speak about his lack of enthusiasm, and she revealed to her that Herman was married. Evelyn was distraught. She had come from El Salvador to begin life afresh, and she thought that she had found the ideal man. He was paying for her apartment and had a fantastic job. She thought that she had her whole life planned out, and the revelation was a massive kick in the gut. Inspector Pierce stated, "It appears the victim had made a decision to stop seeing Herman because she felt he would not leave his wife. It caused some friction because he was paying for her apartment and she wanted to be able to stay there." Just before Evelyn and Alex disappeared, Herman had told Evelyn that he had no intention of leaving his wife. As a result, Evelyn could see no future with him and she called off the relationship. Evelyn had told Herman that while the relationship was off, he could still come and visit his son when he was born. Did you know that the University of Arizona's forecasters have issued a warning regarding the upcoming hurricane season in 2023 that is projected to be similar to that of 2017? In light of this, they strongly urge everybody to take necessary precautions and be prepared for any potential impact. Have you ever wondered just how catastrophic a hurricane can be? Consider the impact of Hurricane Ida on the Gulf Coast. Countless homes were destroyed, power outages affected millions, and resulting floods rendered roads impassable, which made it impossible for grocery stores to replenish their supplies. There's a way to ensure your family's well-being in such crises. Emergency food kits from Four Patriots. These kits consist of long-lasting and tasty food options, purposefully crafted to provide sustenance when you need it most. Their food kits are handpicked in the United States, last up to 25 years, and offer a wide variety of delicious meals. Remember, Four Patriots survival food is not limited to natural disasters. In today's world, where supply chains are uncertain and emergencies are unpredictable, it's more crucial than ever to have a backup plan. And right now, you can go to 4patriots.com and use the code Morbidology to get 10% off your first purchase on anything in the store, including the emergency food supply kits designed to last up to 25 years. Just go to 4patriots.com and use the code Morbidology to get 10% off your first purchase of 4 Patriots survival food. That's 4patriots.com and use the code Morbidology. While Herman had initially claimed that there were no problems in their relationship, he eventually admitted to detectives that Evelyn had called it quits on their relationship. Naturally, many within the community speculated that Herman had something to do with Evelyn and Alex's disappearance. After all, he was a married man who was about to father a baby with Evelyn, and the optics weren't looking good. Detectives had also learned that on the night of the disappearance, after Evelyn spoke with her sister, Herman repeatedly called her. Detectives wondered whether Herman, when he was unable to reach Evelyn, went to her apartment searching for her, although he denied this. However, during a later interview, Herman said that he had driven within two blocks of her apartment that night, but then decided that Evelyn was purposefully avoiding him, so he drove back home. Only adding more to the suspicions, the location where Evelyn's wallet was found was within two blocks of where Herman worked at the limousine company. On the 31st of July, there was a gruesome update in the case when detectives announced that human remains were discovered near the Bay Bridge. A woman's torso and legs washed up along the Embarcadero, and while she hadn't been identified, detectives shared that the woman was wearing a maternity blouse. The human torso was transported to forensic experts, who announced that they were going to be conducting DNA testing to determine whether the remains belonged to Evelyn. On the 4th of September, the results of the DNA test came back, and they revealed that the torso did in fact belong to Evelyn. Inspector Joe Toomey stated, "The DNA positively said that it was her. We got samples from the toothbrush from her. That's it." Due to the advanced state of decomposition, a cause of death couldn't be determined. It also couldn't be determined whether Evelyn had given birth, or whether the baby had been expelled in a coffin birth. Detectives announced that the case was still being investigated as a homicide, and they weren't sure whether Evelyn had been dismembered, or whether her body had become dismembered by animal predation and decomposition. The discovery was a disheartening one. But Evelyn and Alex's family announced that they were still hopeful that Alex was alive, and that they were refusing to give up hope. Herman refused to make a public comment, but his attorney, Robert Tayak, released a statement which said that he was doing everything to cooperate with the investigation, adding that he was saddened by the news of the death of his close friend. He then stated, "He hopes the police department identifies the perpetrator of this horrific crime. He has assisted the police in every respect possible." While Herman had first of all cooperated with detectives, he had since refused. He had told detectives he was adamant about hiding Evelyn's pregnancy from his wife, so he avoided all media coverage and even detectives. She reportedly knew about the affair but had no idea that Evelyn was expecting a baby. It was hoped that with an identification, the investigation would be ramped up and the case would dominate headlines. However, what actually happened was far more disheartening. While the investigation continued behind the scenes, Evelyn and Alex dropped from local newspapers. Their loved ones gathered for a memorial service in San Francisco that drew a crowd of barely 100. Their story was quickly replaced by the story of Lacey Peterson, a pregnant woman who disappeared in Modesto, California in December of 2002. She had gone for a walk with her dog, and her dog was found wandering alone with his leash. Lacey's father reported her missing after her husband, Scott, called him to inform him that he couldn't find her.
Mom, take a stop. How can I help you?
Yes, my son-in-law called. He went playing golf this morning at 9:30. My daughter's been missing since this morning. She's 8 months pregnant. She took her dog for a walk in the park. The dog came home with just a leash on.
So the dog came back without your daughter?
Right.
Okay, what is your address, sister?
Well, I'm at...
Is that where she's...
No, it's over at Maloma Park is where she went for the walk. What is Scott Lake's address? I can't remember.
What's your cell phone number, sir, in case you get disconnected?
It's 404. Jesus, I can't believe I'm going for it. 404.
Okay, so what's the address where she lives and she's missing from?
Her address is.
Over there between Encina and Edgebrook Drive?
Yeah.
Okay, is that a house? What is your name?
My name is Ron. I'm her only step cousin.
Okay, what is your name?
Grant.
Granski.
Granski. Her husband, Scott Peterson, is on his way over to the park to play.
What's your stepdaughter's name?
Scott Peterson.
No, your stepdaughter.
Lacey Peterson.
Lacey, P-E-T-E-R-S-O-N, right?
P-E-T-E-R-S-O-N.
And she's white, black, Hispanic, Asian?
She's Portuguese and white.
How old is she?
She's 26.
Did she leave the house and didn't come back?
That we don't know. We just got a call from our son-in-law that he left this morning at 9:30 to play golf. He just got home about a half hour ago. Nowhere around.
Okay, so she went to walk the dog
Walked it in that park, at the Maloma Park. It's what that park over there was it called? Yeah. It's one under scenic over there, you know, by the tennis court.
Okay. On Encina?
Yeah, do you have a flashlight? Absolutely.
And she's 8 months pregnant, you said?
Pardon?
You said she's 8 months pregnant?
Yes, I am.
Lacey was scheduled to give birth in January of 2003, and her husband, Scott, came to police headquarters to speak with detectives. He told them about his efforts to locate Lacey when she failed to come home.
I called Sharon, and I called a couple of Lacey's closer friends, I think Stacy and Renee. There I was. Had the phone book out to call hospitals when I think Sharon called me back at that point and said that they would do that, call the police, and for me to check the neighbors and go to the park.
Was there anything out of unusual, out of normal in your house?
The only unusual things were the leash and the door being unlocked.
The front door. Or the French doors.
Yeah, what I'm going to call the back door. Right.
Immediately, Lacey's disappearance flooded the media. Her mother, Jackie, shared her belief that she may have been kidnapped for her baby and cited Evelyn's murder. While Lacey's disappearance was an instant public sensation, sadly, Evelyn and Alex's wasn't. Their disappearance wasn't even made public knowledge until over a month after they were last seen. Both Evelyn and Lacey were 8 months pregnant, and both had sons when they disappeared. Numerous press conferences and vigils were held for Lacey, and people came out in the thousands.
And this community, when somebody's hurting, comes together like none I've ever seen before. Lacey's disappearance hasn't impacted just her family and her friends, it's impacted all of us. So again, I want to thank you for being here tonight. I can't tell you what it means to the family to know they have this kind of support.
I just want to thank everybody for coming out here tonight. Lacey would be so happy to see she had so many friends and supporters. And just keep looking for Lacey. Please don't give up.
Here we are on New Year's Eve. The new year starts in just a few hours. And yet we have business that we need to get done. I wish that we had Lacey here for a celebration. And because of my experience and because of the years of police work that I've been in personally, I'm very, very concerned about the outcome. Regardless of the outcome, our hopes and prayers are to bring Lacey and her little baby boy home alive. And if that's not going to be the outcome, we're committed as a department and as a community to know what happened.
In both cases, foul play was speculated early on. Detectives quickly learned that Scott Peterson was having an affair. When Lacey was reported missing, Scott claimed to the woman he was having an affair with, Amber, that he was traveling for work before coming clean.
I don't want to do this over the phone. I want to tell you this. I want to be there in person and tell you this.
Why would that? What are you talking about?
It's the worst thing. Sorry, Amber. I'll just tell you.
Okay.
You haven't been watching the news, obviously.
No.
I have not been traveling during the last couple weeks. I've lied to you that I've been traveling.
Okay.
The girl I'm married to, her name is Lacey.
Mm-hmm.
She disappeared just before Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
For the past 2 weeks, I've been in Modesto with her family and mine, searching for her.
In April of 2003, a well-preserved male fetus was discovered in a marshy area in San Francisco. The next day, a woman's body washed ashore with her limbs and head removed. It was Lacey and her unborn son, which gave her family some semblance of closure. Scott was arrested and charged with their murders, while Evelyn's killer still remained elusive. Evelyn's friend, Berta, commented, "This is something we're all still going through. They haven't found the person who did this." While Evelyn and Lacey shared similar tragic murders, their lives were strikingly different. Evelyn was an immigrant and poor, while Lacey had come from a respected family and was seen as an all-American girl next door. Lacey's family were vocal on advocating on her behalf, but most of Evelyn's loved ones lived abroad, and most of them struggled with English. Evelyn only had two sisters living in the United States, one of whom was deaf and mute. The rest of her family had returned to El Salvador, and her sisters knew very little when it came to terms of the law. Moreover, most of Evelyn's friends only spoke Spanish. The community had come out in droves to search for Lacey, with many commenting on how the tragedy was amplified by the fact that she was pregnant. There was no reward fund for information relating to Evelyn and Alex's case, but there was a $500,000 reward for information relating to Lacey's case that had been collected by the family and donors. A friend of Evelyn, Twiggy Dammy, commented, "This girl Lacey, she's white, they have money, and there's a family behind her. Who cares about Evelyn?" Families of crime victims say that the media spotlight keeps pressure on detectives to work quickly and solve the case. Detectives, on the other hand, say that publicity helps them enlist the help of citizens whose tips might aid in the investigation. Inspector Pira admitted that they should have made the public aware of Evelyn and Alex's disappearance more promptly. She commented, "It's hard to turn back the clock and get what we could have gotten if we had major publicity from the get-go." However, she said that at first, detectives simply assumed that Evelyn had left with Alex on her own volition. Inspector Pira said that they had no sway over what gets covered in the media, and that she wished Evelyn and Alex's case received more publicity. She stated, "Well, I think the majority of the country, media, feels that they're better able to relate to Lacey Peterson than to Evelyn Hernandez. That is probably the largest reason why the case was more interesting to the public than Evelyn Hernandez's was." While nobody could begrudge the attention that Lacey received, the disparity in coverage and interest was grim. Even before Scott Peterson was arrested, the Chronicle had written 32 articles on Lacey's disappearance, four of them on the front page. They had published four about Evelyn and Alex, none of which made the front page. On the 22nd of April, there were over 3,000 stories about Lacey on Google News, while there was just four about Evelyn. Even more poignant, Evelyn's loved ones had repeatedly tried to get the case featured on America's Most Wanted. They were rejected because no warrant had been issued for a suspect. However, they did a show on Lacey, even when no suspects had been named in that case either. In an effort to draw more attention to Evelyn and Alex's case, friends and neighbours demonstrated near the police station. Berta commented, "This cannot be forgotten. She was not traditional, but she was a great woman. A great girl." She also said the detectives began looking for Lacey immediately because they said it wasn't her normal character to disappear. However, when it came to Evelyn, they simply assumed that she had run away or was hiding somewhere. And although her loved ones all said that that was completely out of character, it didn't matter to the detectives. Ultimately, Lacey's husband, Scott Peterson, was convicted of her murder and that of their unborn son. The months continued to drag past, achingly slow for Evelyn and Alex's loved ones, and the uncertainty of Alex's fate lingered. To mark the one-year anniversary of their disappearance, the family held a press conference to try and bring the case to the forefront of everyone's minds. Evelyn's friend, Maria Rinaldi, stated, "We're not going to stop until we know what happened. We want to pressure police to keep investigating." Inspector Pira also commented, and said that it was going to take people to come forward and remember something for the case to proceed. She also added that detectives believed that Alex most likely met the same fate as his mother. She then drummed home that Evelyn and Alex's case was not connected to Lacey's case, although Scott, who was charged with her murder, wanted people to believe that they were somehow linked. She stated, "We want to dispel any rumors that the cases are related. Our investigation has led us to a different direction." Evelyn's sisters and friends then gathered at the spot where her body was found and burned incense, sang songs in Spanish, and tossed bouquets of tulips, roses, and daisies into the bay. Her sister Rena said that Evelyn and Herman fought often in the lead-up to her disappearance and described him as very unlikable. In addition to Evelyn, Herman also had a second girlfriend as well as a wife, but Rena stopped short of accusing him of killing her sister. Then in June, Scott Peterson's attorney requested copies of documents relating to Evelyn's murder. Their request was rebuffed, and Inspector Pierce stated, "I do not believe that there is any information in that file that could link the death of Miss Hernandez with the death of Lacey Peterson." After this, the case once more dropped from newspapers, and Evelyn and Alex were seemingly forgotten about by everybody but their loved ones. Decades passed, and there was absolutely no movement in the case. Detectives stopped short of calling Herman a suspect in the case, and reportedly his wife had provided an alibi. She contended that he was at home with her when Evelyn and Alex disappeared. However, more details regarding this alibi have never been made public. Alex and Evelyn's unborn baby still remain missing, although it's believed that they met the same fate as Evelyn. If you have any information about this case, please contact the SFPD homicide detail at 415-553-1145 or its anonymous tip line at 415-553-1166. Evelyn Hernandez had left her native of El Salvador in pursuit of a better life, hoping to offer her son, Alex, a brighter future. Her encounter with Herman, first of all, seemed like a positive turning point in her life until she learned that he was married. It has now been more than 20 years since Evelyn was discovered deceased, while Alex's whereabouts remain unknown. One can't help but speculate that if their case had received the same level of coverage as that of Lacey Peterson, perhaps the outcome would have been different. Well, besties, that is it for this episode of Morbidology. As always, thank you so, so much for listening. I'd like to say a big massive thank you to my newest supporters up on Patreon, Delaney and Rachel. As mentioned like a million times before, Morbidology is a one-woman podcast, so the support up on there seriously, seriously, seriously goes such a long way. In exchange for your support on Patreon, I upload ad-free and early release episodes, bonus episodes, behind the scenes, which includes bonus audio, videos, and sometimes case files. And I also send out some merch along with a handwritten thank you note. If you'd like to join Morbidology on Patreon, the link is in the show notes. If you'd like to support the show in another way, please consider leaving me a rating and review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever else you're listening. I really do appreciate the feedback. Until next time, take care of yourselves, stay safe, and have an amazing week.
You know those dads who literally never sit down? That was Danny. He constantly was doing something either for them or with them. Hashtag girl dad, totally. We hope to one day have a son, which was taken from us.
If you make a mistake, there's a very severe possibility that you're both going to get shot. Do you understand that?
Yes.
Wanted to do our best to secure, make sure everybody was safe. So we started making verbal commands.
Shut up. You listen, you obey.
You started screaming.
I would describe it as yelling very loudly.
Please do not shoot me.
Okay, listen to my instructions.
I'm trying to do it.
Don't talk. Listen.
He's crawling towards the police, crying, please, please don't shoot me. The officer shot him 5 times.
Hands straight up in the air. Do not put your hands down for any reason. You think you're going to fall, you better fall on your face. Crawl towards me.
Jesus Christ, they murdered that guy! And he got off!
They killed this guy. I mean, it looks a lot like murder.
Cop who killed, fired from the force, is now getting paid, collecting a taxpayer-funded check every month for the rest of his life.
She received a phone call from her 8-year-old school.
She tried choking herself while she was at school and told her friend that she wanted to die.
I lost everything in my life. Mesa's watching every single video on here, so I want to make this message very clear to them. I am not going to stop fighting until my husband gets justice. You didn't realize who you were messing with when you killed Daniel Shaver. I am Lainey Sweet, I'm his wife, and I will not stop fighting.
You just listened to the trailer for the new season of my podcast, Tapes from the Dark Side. The execution of Daniel Shaver is the investigation into the 2016 police shooting of an unarmed man. It's often described as the most disturbing police shooting ever caught on tape. This multi-part series will examine the depravity of the Mesa Police Department's actions that night and the ensuing corruption that is still ongoing to this day. This is Tapes from the Dark Side, the execution of Daniel Shaver. Available now on Apple, Spotify, and all podcast apps. Subscribe today. Just search Tapes from the Dark Side.